Well, I think what is interesting is, from a particularly fundamental standpoint, is that to my knowledge, the Supreme Court has not previously recognized, well, they've certainly recognized that corporate entities are people within the Constitution. What I don't think they've previously recognized is a for-profit corporation having religious rights. So I think that's somewhat of a case of first impression. It doesn't surprise me. I mean, I don't know what the breakdown was, but 5-4 certainly doesn't surprise me, this battle between I have a First Amendment right to not provide certain services. Yes, but we have a federal statute that says you have to do it. So the First Amendment prevailed in the sense that the court says you've got a First Amendment right to not have to do certain things. I mean, emergency contraceptives, intrauterine devices, whatever.
When you look at the Supreme Court and the different ways they have ruled on the Affordable Care Act, this is like, and we talked about at the time, 2,700-page bill. There are many different areas of the law that this implicates. Just your thoughts on these type of very, very difficult legislation that goes forward where a lot of it just ends up in the courts.
That's absolutely correct, because, I mean, the English language is an imperfect medium for communication. Even if we could all agree, and obviously we never agree on legislation, it always passes by a slim margin in this direction or the other. And then the question is, because we have the Supreme Court weighing in on the scope of what the Constitution provides, and generally the Constitution is not a provider of rights, it's a limitation on rights. I get a right because they're limiting you. So it doesn't surprise me that we wind up with so many challenges where people are trying to get more rights by limiting what others can do. And certainly the First Amendment in speech, in religion, has been a major area. And for all we know, there may be other areas hiding inside 2,700 pages
exactly
that are ripe for litigation.
And that's my point. Like when it came to the Patriot Act, and we saw all the court actions on different elements of that because of just the omnibus nature of what they passed, I'm really hoping at some point, Professor, I don't know what you're talking about with your students, that we really look at, instead of creating these huge, massive pieces of legislation that even some of the legal counsel on the committees can't decipher, that we really make them more narrow, because I think that's driving a lot of this court action.
Well, I think that a lot of people conceded that with the pressure to get things passed, particularly a very complex piece of legislation, you wind up with legislation being passed when a lot of the people voting for it actually are looking at summaries that are provided by someone else.
Right.
They've never actually read the text of the statute that they're voting on.
And a lot of the lawyers aren't even completely clear of all the different. I mean, it's really a small group that ends up with the final cake. Let's say everybody's like a slice, but it's only a small group of people that actually know the whole cake.
There is no question. And of course, if you wind up challenging the same thing that people are not getting time to read, and you wind up in a United States District Court, these judges have a busy docket. They have two law clerks, but this stuff is two law clerks who graduated from law school a year ago. This is some pretty complex stuff, and the judges have to rely upon the quality of the lawyering on both sides to kind of focus the issues down. And sometimes that doesn't happen, particularly because these entities can't afford the quality and level of lawyering it takes to get to every fine little detail.
Do you find, Professor, that particularly with this ruling by the Supreme Court and Hobby Lobby really kind of getting into the whole religion and belief system area, that this might be some pushback considering the fact that the government and many people's perception has been kind of invading people's religious beliefs, and this is kind of that pushback?
Well, that may be some. I think, though, that probably, you know, whether I agree with the Supreme Court or disagree with the Supreme Court, they usually stand above the fray. They usually, you know, the Supreme Court doesn't speak last because they're right. Because they speak last, they become right. And so I think that they do what they think is appropriate. And, of course, a lot of these issues, particularly in religion, for example, you can somewhat tell who's going to vote how,
mm-hmm,
because we know where these individuals are coming from, and which is why Anthony Kennedy has become such a significant force on the Supreme Court in what is now almost a decade, because so many of these 5-4 opinions, and I forget what the stats are, but somewhere well in excess of 90% of the 5-4 decisions, he was in the five.
Mm-hmm.
So he really, and which means there's a lot of jockeying going back and forth. You know, if I'm going to write the opinion, I need Kennedy's vote. So I'm going to show him my drafts and he's going to tell me what he doesn't like. And maybe I'm willing to tweak it. Maybe I'm not. I mean, there's all of this stuff going back and forth between the justices as they try to garner a majority.
We're speaking with Professor Byron Warnken from University of Baltimore Law School, and that's what made the whole initial Affordable Care Act decision ruled at Justice Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts being the fifth vote on that, so unique was that it was Justice Roberts, not Kennedy, Professor.
Yes, it was, and I think that of all the scholarly pundits, no one suggested, you know, this is going to wind up being decided 5-4 with Roberts deciding it in the manner in which he decided it.
Let's talk
about doing it on the taxation issue.